The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted yesterday 10-7, approving limited military action in Syria. The resolution would limit strikes against Syrian forces to a period of 60 days, with the possibility of 30 more days after consultation with Congress. It would block the use of American ground troops. The full Senate is expected to vote next week on this resolution, the House the week after that. You get a chance to vote this hour as we talk with two guests who have opposing views on whether the U.S. should intervene militarily in Syria. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, September 5th. In this half hour, we'll talk with a guest who opposes U.S. military intervention, a member of the group Veterans for Peace. After 7:30, we will talk with a guest who was born and raised in Syria, but who now lives in Wisconsin, who supports U.S. military strikes in Syria. What do you think the U.S. should do and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first guest is Buzz Davis, a Stoughton resident, a member of Veterans for Peace. He served in South Korea during the Vietnam War and is a former AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer. His recent column, Say No to War on Syria, appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal, and we have provided a link to that column on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So, why are you saying no to war on Syria?
Basically, for the last 45 years or so, the bullets and bombs haven't solved wars, haven't brought people together in peace. We've had the Korean War as the last big war of massive military units and many civilians getting killed. So wars have changed from our Civil War, when mostly soldiers got killed and some civilians. Wars have changed from nowadays. Most of the people who are killed are civilians, not soldiers. It might be as high as 70 or 80% of the deaths in wars are civilians, not soldiers. And so if a person comes into your home and says, I'm interested in you changing your way of life, I'd like to discuss it with you. Well, maybe you'd discuss it with them if they spoke your language. If they come into your home all loaded up with weapons and fancy uniforms that are very scary, you're not going to discuss changing your way of life for a better country. And so we've been trying to implement democracy, supposedly, with gun barrels, and it doesn't work. Didn't work in Vietnam, didn't work in Iraq, Afghanistan, all the rest of these countries. So we have to take and change it. We have to have a sustainable foreign policy in our nation that will last us the next 300 or 400 years. Sustainable meaning that we will be able to live as a nation that's a democratic nation that has a fairly good life for most of us. We have poverty and everything else. But we need to change the way we do our foreign policy because we're not going to make it.
Yeah. So what do you say about the 1,000 or so civilians in Syria who were killed by a chemical weapon attack that our government says there is evidence the Assad government was behind?
Mm-hmm. And the Russian government says it's possibly other people. And it could be an attack that's created by others to have us do exactly what we're doing, which is getting involved in Syria.
So you think our U.S. intelligence would lie about that the chemical weapons came from the Syrian regime?
The proof is that our government lies about many things. And very important things are more likely to lie about than what is the poverty rate in the United States today. So death is death. Whether people are killed by weapons, atomic weapons, or whether they're killed by chemical weapons or bullet or shell fragments or something like that, it is death. Death can be quick, death can be slow and agonizing. And so we have lost, in the United States, About 470,000 people have been killed on our highways in the last 10 years, 12 years. That's a massive death for us. But our military and our country is not concerned about all those deaths on the highway, which most of it, 40% of them, are involved with alcohol. You know, so we have death is death is death. And the United States is not that concerned about death. These are excuses for us to do political things for oil and other power empire purposes.
But President Obama and the international community has said that the use of chemical weapons is a red line that must not be crossed. So do we just say, okay, well, proceed?
It's a nice idea. And the world has come together with a treaty organization that is against chemical weapons. And if people use chemical weapons, then that's to be investigated. Those people who are allegedly the perpetrators of the crimes are to be brought to international tribunals for punishment. That's the way we handle it in a world that is run by law. We run it with law enforcement officers who go after the people who commit crimes. We don't say, well, there's something going on in Milwaukee that we don't like, and therefore we should bomb Milwaukee. We have law enforcement people who go in to investigate it, and that's the way you handle it. And that's what the world community says should be done. They didn't ask Mr. Obama to go in there. Mr. Obama has plenty of blood on his hands with using chemical weapons, depleted uranium and other types of things in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's no difference between dying from depleted uranium and dying from a chemical weapons attack.
We are talking with Buzz Davis. He is a member of Veterans for Peace. His recent column, Say No to War on Syria, appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal, and we are talking with him about why he opposes a U.S. military strike against Syria. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Should Congress approve military action in Syria? Why or why not? We are talking with two guests about the question during this hour, first with a guest who says no, after 7:30 with a guest who says yes. And we welcome your views and your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Barry in Kenosha first. Hello, Barry.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Good, Barry. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I was in the military for 4 years, and everything that I did was, you know, for us and our country, but to go over to another country after we just got done having a long battle was stuff that, you know, was somewhat understandable, but Syria is not understandable under my thoughts. I mean, we have other problems here in our country that we need to take care of, and Syria is not one of them, in my opinion. I mean, there's other ways to deal with that problem without having to send troops and go and start another conflict with another country that we just have no stake in.
Yeah, and do you agree, Buzz, that we have no stake in what happens to Syria?
Well, we have a stake in what happens everywhere in the world, but what we're speaking about is a stake that is strong enough for us to send in our men and women to possibly die and have to kill people. And so Barry has served in the military. I respect that. In this situation, a man like President Carter, former President Carter, who has a lot of information, a lot of background, he says that the war against Syria would be illegal under international law and, quote, unlikely to alter the course of the civil war that's going on. I agree with Barry, but the basic reason we shouldn't be going in there, and it's like we're discussing what we should have for breakfast, it's illegal for us to have this breakfast. It's illegal under international law and under our Constitution for Mr. Obama to say, well, today I think I'll attack this country over there. Or for the U.S. Congress to be sitting back and saying, well, I think we'll give them 30 or 60 days. No, maybe it should be 90 days. Well, maybe they should just attack with missiles. Those are clean, you know. Well, that's all baloney. It is illegal for them to do that. So any person who orders the attack on Syria is committing an international law crime and a crime against the U.S. Constitution.
You know, and why do you say it's illegal?
It's illegal because under our Constitution, the Congress has the authority to commit us to war and then to pay for the wars. The president does not have the authority to commit us to wars except if we are attacked in some massive way.
But the president's asking Congress for that authority.
He is asking Congress for the authority, and at the same time he says, I have the authority to do this when I wish.
But if Congress gives him the authority?
If Congress gives him the authority, Congress has given him the authority to do an illegal act.
And that's what I'm asking.
And that's
why
under
is it
the international, so under the United Nations Charter, which we helped set up the organization, it is illegal for any country to attack another country. That's a war of aggression. And only the United Nations can do wars on countries, and they have to decide that through the Security Council.
Yeah, and if Russia blocks it because Russia is an ally with Syria, then, you know, if there's one country that agrees with atrocities, then the rest of the world should just
That's the situation we're in right now. And so Mr. Obama, as should have Mr. Bush, said we need to modify and amend the United Nations Charter so that we give the United Nations to take the authority to take action in very serious situations in the Congo and other places that the United Nations wishes to do rather than have one nation block it with a veto.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Kathy in Duluth. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm going to take you off the speakerphone. I am definitely a no to the strike, and I suppose these questions should be for the next guest, but I want to know what is the proposed outcome of the strike, how is it going to help, and who will we be killing or harming? I don't find that information anywhere.
Well, it's against Syrian forces is what the strike is supposed to be geared to. But
more specifically, they say that the strike is to be against the Syrian military and the Syrian government to prevent them from using chemical weapons. So we've done stupid things in the past, like blow up chemical weapons supplies, and then you have the chemicals all over the place, which American soldiers then breathe the air. So you can't. What they're talking about that they want to do, you can't do it. So they want to say, we will teach these people a lesson by bombing them, and then they won't use chemical weapons anymore. But the whole issue is not chemical weapons. The whole issue is killing people. So we will kill people to train to teach people not to kill more people. It's nuts. It doesn't get there, and it doesn't stop there. Once you take and start war, the cat is out of the bag. The cat runs wherever it wants in the house, and then you are chasing after it, and you end up with there is no plan. Mm-hmm. It's like the greatest generals have said, we have all plans before the wars, a war or combat operation starts, and once it starts, everything starts falling apart, and we start deciding by the seat of our pants, and whoever happens to make the best decisions wins.
Yeah. So what would it take for you to, if you would ever, approve of a military strike against Syria?
Against Syria? I'm not interested in a strike against Syria.
Right, I know. I mean, right. Could Syria can just do what it wants. We should just...
Syria is under... is part of our international community. Russia has a lot of authority on Syria, influence in Syria. Other groups do. There are many groups that are funding the groups fighting against President Assad. And so What we need to do is pressure these people with every type of efforts we can to come to a peace table, and it can't be one that's run by the United States. It has to be run by the United Nations. Come in, which is what the United Nations wants to do. United Nations wants to do anyway, planning and conducting a peace council where they all come together, the powers that are fomenting what's going on inside of Syria, along with the Syrian government. They come together and they talk and they talk and they talk. And at the same time, people are using their political pressure and economic pressure to help people decide and do things in a peaceful way rather than continuing what's become a civil war.
Let's go to Joan in Williams Bay next. Hello, Joan.
Oh, hello. During our War of Independence from England, we asked for help. France responded. I don't know if we asked anyone else. And I wondered if Syria rebels have asked for outside help. And number two, is Syria part of the United Nations agreement to not use chemical weapons? Did Syria sign on to that?
Half yes and half no. I think the president signed it, but they may not have ratified it, just like we agree with certain treaties and don't ratify them.
Yeah. Well, I thought that the Syrian opposition was also split on whether they wanted U.S. help, at least up until recently. The guest who we're going to talk with after 7:30 is calling on for U.S. help, and he's the founder of a humanitarian group to help the citizens of Syria, and he is opposed to the to the Assad regime, and he is calling on a U.S. military intervention. Should that make a difference if the rebels are asking for U.S.
Well,
help?
The rebels are a group of many different people. It's easy to label them rebels, label them as opposition forces. The democratic folks are the folks who usually get killed in these operations, because many times democratic groups of people that would like to have the Assad regime more democratic are the first ones to get killed, because they don't do killing in return. And so then you end up with people that are much more hardened, various factions, many different types of groups. And so the lady who talked about it was the French. The French enabled the United States to win the eight years Revolutionary War that we had. And we were very grateful for that. Almost bankrupted their country. But today, in terms of helping Syria, we are already, as I understand it from David Swanson, who's a War as a Crime blog, that the people that he's talked with in the aid community, that the United States has already spent $1 billion on helping refugees. And so we need to improve that, help more refugees, help them with health, food, safety, security, education, as they flee these areas where the fighting is going on. That is the way we should be helping them, but we need the biggest help we can do for the Syrian people is to encourage and force the United Nations to take action against this and force the Russians to help us. And it call for changes in the way the United Nations is run through an amendment. All the rest of the actions are illegal, and they're impeachable under our U.S. Constitution. So those congressmen who vote in favor of war are voting in favor of a war of aggression, which is an impeachable offense. It's a high crime. And Mr. Obama, for the Veterans for Peace, we're already calling for Mr. Obama's impeachment, because he is continuing the wars of Afghanistan and Iraq and continuing the torture, continuing the spying, all the illegal activities of Mr. Bush and Cheney. Mr. Obama is continuing, and therefore he is has committed high crimes, as those men have and should be impeached.
How optimistic are you that the U.S. will not intervene militarily in Syria?
Well, I'm not optimistic. These men are, it is a surreal situation we're in with a group of people. It's similar to say, well, we should torture those people that we have confined on the other room there. And Obama says we should torture them one way. Congress will discuss whether we should torture them another way, discuss whether we should only torture them for 60 days, whether we should torture them with this technique, that technique. The fact is, it's illegal for you to torture people. It is unproductive to torture people. And so you shouldn't be torturing them. In Syria, we should not be bombing Syria. We should not be discussing bombing Syria. We should be discussing using the United Nations, which is the best thing we have, to create some sort of peace over there.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Buzz Davis is a Stoughton resident, a member of Veterans for Peace. He served in South Korea during the Vietnam War as a former AmeriCorps Vista volunteer. His recent column, Say No to War on Syria, appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal, and we have linked it to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will welcome in a guest who was born and raised in Syria and is the founding member of the group PROMISE, a non-governmental organization that raises funds and provides humanitarian aid to people inside Syria. He supports U.S. military intervention. That's coming up after the news. We just heard from a guest who wrote a recent column that appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal, Say No to War on Syria. Buzz Davis says such a military action would be illegal, it would be unjustified, and it would not help the people of Syria. Now we will hear from a guest who is from Syria but now lives in Wisconsin, who supports U.S. military intervention. And we will continue to welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 7:37 on this Thursday, September 5th. Our guest is Dr. Khaldun Alaswad, a cardiologist from Appleton. He was born and raised in Syria and is a founding member of PROMISE, a non-governmental organization that raises funds and provides humanitarian aid to people inside Syria. He supports U.S. military intervention, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, what's your reaction to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday voting 10-7 in favor of limited military action in Syria?
I tell you what I hear from Syria and my own reaction. It's a kind of a sigh of relief that after 29 months of asking for the U.S. help, finally the U.S. help is one step closer to come and helping the Syrian people. And I have to dispel several myths here. That it's not really kind of, we don't classify it as rebels and government. It's actually the Syrian people and a regime. And the rebels are the kids in neighborhoods, and they are the college students, the doctors, the engineers who had no livelihood, who had to stop doing what they're doing and basically defend their neighborhoods and families and their cities. So the people in Syria and myself are actually waiting anxiously for the final vote.
Yeah. Well, our guest and many others, our guest in our last half hour said striking Syria with bombs, with missiles, is not going to solve anything. What good will it do?
This is a question. Syrian people actually refused at the beginning. They did not want military intervention from anyone around the world. But we face a problem here. We face a problem that there is a regime which knows it's back against the wall. The regime has already committed so many crimes against the people of Syria and against actually the people of the region too. A regime has used chemical weapons just to stay in power. This regime is not willing to sit for any political process. I heard Mr. Davis telling you that we should proceed with political process. The regime had been derailing every political process started over the last 29 months, although the regime says it will go to Geneva too, but continues to kill people on the ground, continue to have snipers to terrorize civilians in the streets. Russians mismanaged the crisis over the 29 months. The regime used chemical weapons, ballistic missiles against neighborhoods, bombed neighborhoods with napalm, and bombed neighborhoods from the skies and from the ground with tanks and mortar grenades. And the Russians continue to provide the Assad regime with weapons and weapons of mass destruction. So we cannot really trust the Russians on this. They mismanaged the crisis. If the Russians were really sincere about a political process in Syria, they would have forced the regime to sit with the Syrian people and the Syrian people representative and the opposition representative and negotiate long time ago, even before Geneva. In the same time, the regime is actually imprisoning thousands of peace activists in Syria. The Russians did not make any step to force the regime at least to release those peace activists. One prominent member of the Syrian opposition who is completely for the political process and a peaceful resolution, Dr. Abdelaziz Al-Khayr. He's a doctor who spent 14 years as a prisoner of conscience by the regime, and he was released several years ago. He's now back again in jail, and the Russians did not pressure the regime to release him. So we cannot really depend on the Security Council, which has been blocked by Russia and China. We cannot depend on the Russians. The U.S. and the international community does not have partners in the Security Council in Russia and China. The U.K. Is willing to help, but they're not going to interfere as with a military power. But France still want to help. 10 other countries will help us in our military effort to help the Syrian people at least defend themselves. Our intervention will tip the power in to the side of the Syrian people, will degrade Assad's capability maiming his country and his people. We need to make sure that Assad is not able to use chemical weapons, because Syrian people and a lot of other experts in the world know that if the regime use of chemical weapon, which killed 1,400 people, 426 of them are children, went without punishment, the regime will definitely use chemical weapons on a larger scale next time. It could be my mother in South Syria, in a city which the regime thinks is instigated everything, and it's been living under collective punishment for the last 29 months under occupation by the regime. A city like as big as Appleton has 76 checkpoints and snipers on every street corner, which once in a while will kill a child or kill a man or kill a grandmom or kill a person just because they need to remind the community that we are here.
Dr. Al-Aswad, what's your response to those who say that they're not sure that it was the Syrian government that used the chemical weapons, that it could have been the opposition, that it could have been something worse than that to make the U.S. think the regime did it?
Well, the response to that is twofold. First of all, Syria has the largest stock of chemical weapons in the world, and it was all the time in the custody of the regime. So the regime is ultimately responsible for securing these stockpiles, and if it was to be released to some rogue group, that actually ultimately is the regime responsibility. And second, the experts from Syria and from outside Syria They actually found out that the missiles which carried the chemical weapons were launched from military from an areas where the regime forces are actually based. It was launched against the civilian population, which mainly is actually the social structure which carries the opposition forces. So why would the opposition forces kill their own people? The people who fight in Jobar and in these cities, they actually, the kids of that town, they're not coming from Chechnya as the regime trying to claim or coming from outside the country. They are the men and women and young men and women who actually live in that town, who had to, just like the American revolutionaries, like farmers who had to drop what they do to the, in their farms and go fight to defend their country and their towns. So why would they kill their own kids? This does not make sense. Second, Secretary Kerry said yesterday, according to the evidence, our representative and our senators and congresspersons saw in a classified briefing and unclassified briefing that we in America send people to jail for life on these kind of evidence. Although they call it circumstantial evidence, there is no smoking gun, but all the evidence available to our representative and our government tells them that the Assad regime did it. The UK agrees with that. Our ally in the region, Turkey, agrees with that. And most importantly, the Syrian people, all of them know that. We have been living with this regime for the last 40 years or longer than that, and we know this regime stops at nothing. And the regime, and forget about chemical weapons, the regime already used conventional weapons, ballistic missiles, to kill more than 110,000 people. The regime already, according to the U.S. estimate, used the chemical weapons on a smaller scale for about 12 times so far, and this, the last time, it was the largest number of casualties and victims. This has been actually a pattern. When the revolution broke out in my hometown in Deraa, Syria, it's a hometown as big as Appleton, in March of 2011, the regime was so measured and careful in its response. It actually used only live bullets to kill two of the peaceful demonstrators and watched what the international community reaction will be. When the reaction was not really as much as the crime committed, the regime start escalating. Then they use machine guns. Then they use mortar grenades. Then they use tanks. Then they are now bombing civilians' neighborhoods from the skies with MiG Russian-made airplanes. Then when they didn't have enough airplanes, they start using barrels filled with TNT, and they drop them. Then eventually they start using Scud missiles against Al-Bab, a city in northern Syria, which even if it has fighters in it, but it has civilians more than any fighters. So why would a regime kill its own people if it was really what we think of conventional thinking, that this is a government by the people, of the people?
Let me jump in, Dr. Al-Aswad. We have a break coming up, and we have many callers who also have questions or views on this. We are talking with Dr. Khaldun Al-Aswad. He's a cardiologist and an Appleton resident, Appleton, Wisconsin, but he was born and raised in Syria. And he is talking with us about why he supports U.S. military intervention in Syria. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, September 5th. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted yesterday 10-7 approving limited military action in Syria. The resolution would limit strikes against Syrian forces to a period of 60 days with the possibility of 30 more days after consultation with Congress. It would block the use of American ground troops. The full Senate is expected to vote on the resolution next week, the House the week after that. And we are welcoming your votes this hour. Hour, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Or your questions for our guest, who was born and raised in Syria. He now lives in Wisconsin. He's an Appleton cardiologist, but he supports U.S. military intervention in Syria to help the Syrian people. He is Dr. Khaldun Al-Aswad, and our first caller for him is George in Milwaukee. Hello, George.
Yes, hi. I'm afraid that such an attack by the United States might actually gain Assad more popular support as he stands up to Western powers, and that more Syrians that are don't quite know who to turn to in terms of who to support might be someone on the fence, although there may not be many of them left, are more likely to actually back him out of nationalist sentiments if we were to do this.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Al-Aswad?
Yeah, I agree with you. If this has happened probably 10 years ago and before the Assad killed hundreds of thousands over the last 40 years, if we chronicle the crimes, and lately the Assad has been seen by the Syrian community as not one of them, basically, they because they feel it's not one of them who can do that. The Syrian people came to kind of came of age now at this time. The situation in Syria matured where the people actually rose up defending their freedom, and they understand the empty rhetoric the Assad regime always kind of pays lip service to nationalism, but they now know quite sure this is all kind of a lip service to these ideals, but none of them is applied in reality. So I agree with you if it was 5 years ago, but at this time the Syrian people are actually rose up asking for a freedom and national dignity and their human dignity. And because of that, the situation is a little bit different than what we did in Iraq or what we did in Afghanistan. There was a government. The people were not actually rising up in the streets. They had not paid more than 100,000 victims for their freedoms. They have not paid hundreds of thousands of jailed and tortured, and they have not actually lost their livelihood, and 7 million refugees outside a country of 23 million. So the Syrian people are actually much more mature now after all this really hardship they've been living under than what it had been 10 years ago.
Let's take another call. Jay in Madison. Hello, Jay.
Hi, good morning, Joe. I'm a recent listener, and I thoroughly enjoy your program.
Well, thank you, Jay. What's your question or thought on this?
My question was whether the doctor here would support arming the anti-Assad factions, and secondly, whether or not there's an example of military, U.S. military intervention actually successfully resolving any sort of civil wars in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, definitely I support arming the Free Syrian Army, which is 80,000 to 100,000 strong, actually young men and women. There are women among them. And those are basically the Syrian people, and most of them an army officers defected from the Syrian regime. I definitely support arming them, and I support arming them for two reasons. First of all, they have to topple this regime, and second, and if we don't arm them, there are other groups which get really good arms and well-funded and well-supported, although it's a minority, it's the extremists, who the political void we left over the last 29 months allowed them to pour into Syria. There is about 5,000 to 6,000 of those extremists. Arming the Free Syrian Army will actually help them get rid of those extremists, too, in addition to toppling the regime. However, if you want to talk about previous examples about military intervention that kept the peace in the Middle East, not in the Middle East. I agree with you, but this could be the first time it happened in the Middle East. But we have a good example. It's Kosovo and Rwanda. Our intervention in Kosovo, 78 days of sustained bombing of the Serbian forces, forced Slobodan Milosevic to retreat and back down and give the Kosovars their freedom after they lost 250,000. Same thing. We now, the Clinton administration still regrets had not intervened earlier in Rwanda. 500,000 people lost their life. And this is kind of, this is bring us to several points. Like, there are a lot of misconception and a lot of unchallenged statements by the media. Believe or not, the Syrian people do not see this as a civil war. They actually, even if you look in the Webster Dictionary, it's not a civil war according to that, because it is a people rising up against a tyrannical regime, while a civil war is two people fighting each other, or two group of people and the same people fighting each other. And this is actually not the situation on the ground. It is largely still two people. It happened that the Syrian regime is from a religious minority, but that the people of Syria did not rise up because of the regime is from that minority. In fact, the Syrian people accepted his father from that religious minority in 1970 as their president. And they accepted him in the year 2000 when he inherited the republic. So they're not rising up because he's Alawi or he's a minority. They're rising up because he's a dictator.
We have, we're very short on time. Very briefly, Martin on Facebook says, what the United States needs to do is impose sanctions on Syria and any country that continues to do business with Syria until Assad steps down. Why not that approach?
Because it has not worked. There are sanctions on Syria, and it has not worked. And I think probably the sanctions harmed the Syrian people. And we're not going to be able to impose sanctions on Russia. Russia continue to support the regime. We're already imposing sanctions on Iran, which is supporting the regime with manpower and weapons. So it didn't work.
Yeah. What is your hope in terms of U.S. military intervention in Syria? What exactly do you want to see?
I want the U.S. to help the Syrian people degrade Assad capability in killing him, and then help the Syrian people topple the regime. The Syrian people do not want boots on the ground. They do not want foreign boots on the ground. That I can't stress that enough. And the Syrian people are good guys. There are very few bad guys in everything, and same thing probably was said about the revolutionary in our country here in America when we were uprising against the British. There are always a few bad guys, but mostly these people rose up for their freedom. We want to see partnership between the Syrian people and the United States of America people to help us topple the regime and rebuild democracy and rebuild the country. And you'll be actually amazed about the entrepreneurship and about how Syrian people and how Syrian culture is similar to our culture here.
Well, we have to leave it there for now. I hope you'll come back and talk with us again sometime. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Khaldun Al-Aswad is a cardiologist and Appleton resident, born and raised in Syria. A founding member of PROMISE, a non-governmental organization that raises funds and provides humanitarian aid to the people inside Syria, he supports U.S. military intervention. Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction and Robin Cherry for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.